Last week was a momentous one for the U.S. Supreme Court, as the High Court heard two cases that, when decided, could have national implications on the rights of same-sex couples. On Tuesday, the court heard Hollingsworth v. Perry, which challenges California's Proposition 8 law, which made same-sex marriage illegal in the state. Wednesday, the court heard arguments in United States v. Windsor, in which an 83-year-old New York City woman, Edie Windsor, is challenging the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, known as DOMA, which defines marriage as between one man and one woman. Joining us now on Midday Magazine, distinguished professor at Albany Law, Stephen Gottlieb. Stephen, what did you think of the proceedings?
Well, first of all, I think that what they're going to do is try to get out of deciding the California case at all, because the implications of that California case would be national.
And now this is the Proposition 8 case, correct?
That's right. And I think that some of the conservative justices probably thought that they could put that that case in a box and say, no, that right doesn't exist. And public opinion has changed so radically that you even have Scalia saying, well, he doesn't really know what harm it does for homosexuals to be married to each other. That's pretty radical for Scalia to be backing off like that. I think that there's a significant number of people on the court that don't want to decide that case at all. And if that includes Kennedy, who's always a big question mark in close cases like this, then the case will be dumped. If he's more comfortable with a right, then it's possible that the court could decide that. But more likely what the court, I think, is going to do is it's going to decide that the particular provisions of the Defense of Marriage Act, which do not accept a state's definition of marriage, do not accept New York's definition of marriage, and substitute a federal definition of marriage, that's probably going to be treated as a violation of federalism. That's a funny one, because there are a lot of people around who believe that the court really cares about federalism. And what I'm seeing is the court cares a great deal about federalism when the states do what they want. And it doesn't care at all about federalism when the states don't do what they want. In this case, I think what's happening is it's a much more comfortable case for Kennedy to say the people of New York want to recognize this. There are important values and they should be able to do it. And it's a much easier case for the other conservatives to swallow because it is on federalism grounds and they're not establishing some national right. They're also not eliminating all aspects of DOMA. Congress does have the power to prescribe the extent to which the acts, laws, judgments of other states carry weight in another state. And states can sometimes refuse to honor another state's judgments, and sometimes they can't. But the specific rule that says, no, we don't accept your definition for federal purposes, I think that is going to go.
Now, you mentioned this being more palatable for Justice Kennedy to make a decision on the DOMA case in this case. How much of that has to do with what we've been hearing over this past week about the tide of history, if you will, the fact that there are all these new numbers out that gay marriage is being more accepted across the country, especially by younger people?
In Kennedy's case, you got to remember he's been out in front of the public. Mm-hmm. So I think the problem here is that making the whole country accept gay marriage is a step that he finds uncomfortable. He was more comfortable with saying you couldn't put people behind bars for having a homosexual relationship. But the marriage issue, I think pretty obviously, is bugging him.
The fact that it would be marriage as opposed to a civil union or something like that.
A civil union, or merely saying it's not criminalizable. And you notice that he was also concerned what happens to people. So one of his questions on Tuesday was, what happens to all the kids in California that have two men two fathers or two mothers? He does have a strong libertarian streak, and so he is concerned about what happens to people. But yeah, marriage is hard.
In both of these cases, the seem to be that the first round of the arguments focused on whether or not the court even had jurisdiction to hear them. Now, is this typical of these type of arguments, or is it because of these cases?
There are things that happened in these cases that create the problem. So in California, the state government refused to defend the amendment. And in the New York case, the federal government refused to defend the particular provision of the Defense of Marriage Act. That created a problem about who has rights to go forward. It certainly isn't the first case where that issue has been raised. The court has sometimes successfully dealt with it. In this case, it actually appointed someone in the New York case to go forward and raise the issues that the federal government was not willing to raise.
The court did.
So there are ways that the court has handled this problem before, but it's a gray area, and it creates an opportunity to get out of deciding something they don't want to.
Now, much of the media coverage over the past week has, of course, been on the two same-sex marriage cases, but there was another decision made by the court regarding warrantless searches, if you will, or searches and privacy. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the court's decision was based on property. Scalia wrote the opinion. An interesting group of justices. It was Scalia, Thomas, and three of the liberal justices, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan, who formed the majority. And he wrote an opinion, but in a sense he wrote it for two of them, although five of them signed it, saying that this was private property. There was no invitation for the police to come up and sniff around the house, and therefore that it was a search. There was no warrant. The search could not be made. Scalia has always been very protective of the house.
And now the search being this, there was a drug-sniffing dog.
The drug-sniffing dog, exactly. But three of the members of that majority also signed another opinion, which said that the protection is broader than the property right. It's the expectation of privacy. And that would have covered a lot more ground than Scalia and Thomas were willing to protect. Then there's another opinion that Alito wrote for himself and Justices Roberts and Kennedy, and also Justice Breyer. And they took the position that, the expectation of privacy is something we have a right to in many circumstances, but not here. That, you know, lots of people come up to your door, and the fact that it's a dog and he starts yelping because of what he smells is not a violation of that expectation of privacy. So in a way, you have the nine justices going three different ways. There's clearly a majority to protect some privacy rights, but there's a dispute about the grounds. And for the moment, Scalia sort of represents the center of the court.
Now, we're just getting started with the court this year with some of these cases. What do we have to look forward to going forward?
Well, the Project on Fair Representation is asking the court to consider a case which would define the one person, one vote principle. The census distributes congressional seats on the basis of population. Now, that population, of course, includes the entire family and includes people who are old enough to vote but haven't registered. It also includes non-citizens, particularly if they're here legally, although historically people like that have been harder to count. And people like the homeless, even if they're qualified to vote, have been harder to count. But the Project on Fair Representation says we should only be counting voters. Interesting question, how we would do that and how we could do that in advance, since this means that you know, if you're a voter, that means you have to register, and registration figures could take some time. But it also means that if you're a parent, your family would not count. And that's likely to have very large implications for the balance between the parties, because immigrant families are likely to be larger, and the Latino American community that moved fairly strongly in the direction of President Obama is likely to have much less representation under a rule that limits representation to voters and therefore creates a different definition for apportionment than the census does. Now, given that the census provision is fairly specific about population, not voters, presumably the court could do that with respect to state elected officers. It would be a much harder proposition to defend with respect to Congress, and therefore harder to defend with respect to the presidential election. But I have no doubt that people will make arguments in that direction. So that's a case when the court, if the court takes it up, if the court decides to take it up, and it's in front of the court. As far as I know, the court hasn't yet decided to take that up, but I think it's likely. And if the court takes that up, that's one with rather huge repercussions for the way we're represented, at least in the states. And the other case in the election field that's coming up that's likely to be particularly significant has to do with overall limitations on what you can contribute. So there have been limitations on whether you could contribute $1,000 to this candidate or whatever to a political action committee and so forth. But there are also and to political parties, there'd be a separate limit. But then there's been an overall limitation. And if that overall limitation is overturned by the court, that has somewhat unpredictable results. I mean, the political science about what that would do is at least to me, I'm not a political scientist, I do read that material, but at least to me, there are a bunch of different arguments about what the impact of that would be, but it certainly is going to be an argument that will create a lot of heat.
Well, a lot of big cases coming up, big cases that have just been argued, and we've been here talking with Stephen Gottlieb, Distinguished Professor of Law at Albany Law School. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure, Pat.